Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is February 14th, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is, Don't Push It, Pre-Hospital IV Antibiotics for Sepsis. And we have two guest skeptics today. The first is Jay Loosley. He is the Superintendent of Education at Middlesex London Paramedic Service. He has roped in Jen. Jen Doyle is a paramedic educator at Middlesex London Paramedic Service. Welcome back to the SGMJ.
Thanks so much, Ken. So glad to be back.
And Jen, it's nice to meet you.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, Jay, last time we were rinsing about therapeutic hypothermia.
Yes, we were. We were rinsing all right.
Yeah, we covered that rinse trial about therapeutic hypothermia for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Do you remember the bottom line?
I sure do. We didn't have good evidence that providing pre-hospital cooling to patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest receiving CPR had any benefit. So therefore, we couldn't recommend it at that time.
Well, we are recording this in February. We're in Canada.
Brr.
And whether you had an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest or not, there might be a little hypothermia going on, even if it's not therapeutic. But hey, we're recording this in a brand new building. Tell us about your new digs.
Yeah, it's located in London, Ontario, and it's an awesome facility for training, education, logistics. Everything is housed here, and our garage can hold up to 30 trucks.
Wow. Well, I just took a little mini tour of their education room and their Sims lab. Jen, you're going to have lots of fun in there with the new recruits.
We absolutely are. We're very excited to start rolling everything out.
Now, you guys took some time to divvy up the responsibilities. Who's going to be giving the case?
I will be giving the case. So, and throughout this study, it talks about EMS personnel. And I just want to mention that normally we would say paramedics, but this study was done in the Netherlands, and they don't have paramedics there. They have nurses and other allied people working on those trucks. So today we're going to talk about EMS personnel. So it grabs all of those people. So EMS was dispatched to a retirement home, like we always are, and they had a 73-year-old male who complains of weakness for the last 48 hours. So you arrive on scene and find a man lying in his bed looking ill. He has a history of hypertension, benign prostatic hypertrophy, and osteoarthritis. His medications are ramipril, hydrochlorothiazide, and tamsulosin. On examination, he has a temperature of 38.7, little tachy at 105 beats per minute, respiratory rate of 26, his SATs are around 88, so we're going to give him some supplemental oxygen. So we load him on the stretcher and see that his blood pressure is 88 on 50. We start an IV of normal saline, give him some fluids. Clearly something infectious is going on, and you wonder if starting antibiotics en route is something that might help.
So we've covered sepsis many times on the SGM over the years, and it's a serious condition associated with high morbidity and mortality.
Yes, other serious time-dependent conditions such as myocardial infarctions and trauma have improved significantly with emergency medical services. It's been reported that over half of patients with sepsis arrive to the emergency department via the ambulance. However, Ken, it's not clear if patients with suspected sepsis can have improved survival rates if antibiotics are provided in the pre-hospital setting.
Well, Jen, there are studies showing that early recognition and pre-hospital administration of antibiotics are associated with increased survival rate. Delay in antibiotics has also been associated with an average decrease in survival of about 8% per hour.
I think we just need to be skeptical of these retrospective studies, especially when prospective observational studies have failed to show any association between early antibiotics and a reduction in mortality.
Did you hear that, Jay? She said skeptical.
Oh, I know that word.
Oh, I like her already. Well, now we even have better evidence with the publication of the first prospective randomized study investigating the effects of early antibiotic administration in patients with suspected sepsis. So what's the clinical question?
Can patients with varying degrees of sepsis benefit from early recognition and pre-hospital administration of antibiotics in the ambulance?
And what's the reference?
The reference was Alam and et al., Pre-Hospital Antibiotics in the Ambulance for Sepsis, a multi-center, open-label, randomized trial in The Lancet, November 2017.
All right, let's run through the PICO. That's the Population Intervention Control and Outcome. What was the population they were looking at?
We had adult patients, 18 years or older, with a diagnosis of suspected infection, temperature greater than 38 or less than 36, and at least one other SIRS which, if you're not familiar with the SIRS criteria, systemic inflammatory response syndrome. Criteria of heart rate over 90, respiratory rate over 20, or both.
And they had some exclusions. If you were allergic to ceftriaxone, you didn't get in the study, or if you were allergic to other beta-lactams. If you were known to be pregnant or suspected it was a prosthetic joint infection. What was the intervention?
Ceftriaxone of 2 grams IV.
Okay, and what did they use as the control?
For the control, it was just the usual care, so a fluid bolus and supplementary oxygen.
And they had a primary outcome. What was their primary outcome?
All-cause mortality at 28 days.
Well, I think that's pretty patient-oriented and easy to diagnose. It's not like you're mostly dead. It's a dichotomous outcome, alive or dead. And there was a number of secondary outcomes, and I'll list them in the show notes. But the author's conclusions were, quote, in patients with varying severity of sepsis, EMS personnel training improved early recognition and care in the whole acute care chain. However, giving antibiotics in the ambulance did not lead to improved survival regardless of illness severity. End of quote. All right, which one of the two of you is going to go through the quality checklist with me? Oh, don't all volunteer at once.
Yes, I am, Ken.
All right, so there's 11 questions. Let's fire them off, Jay.
Okay.
The first one is the study population. Is it including or focused on those in the emergency department?
No, this was a study of an intervention done in the pre-hospital setting. However, these people were brought to the ED, and great emergency care takes a team from the pre-hospital setting. So put that into the department, and it's a team effort. After the patient is transferred to the inpatient unit or discharged.
Yeah, and that gets at the whole chain of things, right? So just because these patients didn't present originally to the emergency department and the intervention wasn't in the emergency department, it isn't part of that whole chain of emergency department care. In other words, it's from the time the person dials 911 or whatever your emergency code is in your country, but the time they reach out for those emergency care services, the pre-hospital care they receive before the emergency department, the care in the department, and then once they're transferred either to the ICU as an inpatient or discharged home and their follow-up care. All of that requires a great team effort. Question number two, the patients, did they adequately randomize them?
Yes, the patients were randomly assigned one-to-one using a block randomization with block sizes 4 to intervention or usual care.
And did they conceal the randomization?
Yes and no, and here's where it gets fun. So randomization was stratified by region and consecutively numbered with indistinguishable envelopes. That's how they were used, so the paramedics had an envelope. Now, during the first few months, the EMS personnel were starting to open envelopes until they received one that said, intervention, ta-da! Well, paramedics like to do things, not to do things. So they were looking for ones that said, do something. So we'll talk more about this in the nerdy section.
Oh, yes, we will. Okay, number four, the patients. Were they analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized? And that's getting at, did they do an intention to treat analysis?
Yes, data was analyzed using the intention to treat principle.
And the study patients, were they recruited consecutively?
Yes.
Were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes, they were.
And were all the participants unaware of their group allocation?
No, this was an open label study, so EMS personnel were aware of which group their patient was being randomized to after they opened one of their concealed envelopes, or after they opened many envelopes and decided to go with that.
And they went, ta-da!
Ta-da!
Intervention.
Yes.
All right, number eight, all groups, were they treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
Did they have complete follow-up?
You betcha.
Did they consider all patient-important outcomes?
Yes, they did.
And the final question, question number 11, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No, it was not.
All right, let's run through those key results. They enrolled close to 3,000 patients in the study, and they had a mean age of 73 years, with 42% being female. Now, they did stratify the patients into non-severe sepsis, severe sepsis, septic shock, and other diagnoses. Now, the vast majority of patients, 95%, had non-severe sepsis or severe sepsis, and 1 in 5 patients were already on antibiotics before randomization. But what was the primary outcome?
There was no difference in mortality at 28 days.
Okay, let's drill down on that primary outcome for mortality at 28 days. What was the actual percentage?
Well, the actual percentage was 8%. That's 120 out of 1,535 people in the intervention group versus 8% which was 93 people out of 1,137 people in the control group.
Yeah, and I don't think you have to be a math wizard to figure out 8% and 8% weren't different. And when they did some fancy stats, the relative risk was 0.95 with a 95% confidence interval that crosses 1. So there was no difference in their primary outcome. Now, they did have a bunch of secondary outcomes, so let's just bang them out quickly here.
Sure.
Misdiagnoses?
No difference.
Mortality within 90 days?
No difference.
Hospital length of stay?
No difference.
ICU admissions?
No difference.
ICU length of stay?
I wish I could say in a different language. No difference.
And how about quality of life?
No difference.
I'm sensing a trend here. How about time to antibiotic intervention?
Before hospital arrival, 26 minutes. This led to a time gain of 96 minutes.
And then compare that to the time to antibiotic in the usual group.
After arriving to the ED, 70 minutes. This was 23 minutes faster than the baseline measured before they did the training for this study.
And we have to always consider adverse events.
No anaphylactic shock in the intervention group. There were 7 mild allergic reactions that none could be attributed to the actual cefotroxime.
And now they did have a lot of subgroup analyses, and as you know, this is hypothesis generating. However, there was no difference in the primary outcome, and to remind everybody, that was mortality at 28 days, for any of the subgroups, including severity of sepsis. Okay, it's time to talk nerdy, and we're going to go through my typical 5 points, but you guys are going to have to alternate because I can't do all the nerdy bits, but I will start. So the first thing is protocol violations. You mentioned this earlier, Jay. During the first few months, EMS personnel were opening envelopes until they found one that read, intervention. This led to a higher number of patients being enrolled in the intervention group and a decrease in the randomization of patients. However, even with this protocol violation, there were no differences between the groups in terms of primary or secondary outcomes.
All right, I guess it's my turn to talk nerdy. The second point, time to antibiotics. This was not measured as time from onset of infection, but rather time to antibiotics in the pre-hospital setting or in the emergency department. There was a huge net gain of patients getting antibiotics more than 96 minutes earlier in their intervention group. However, this did not lead to a mortality benefit and demonstrates the difference between statistical significance and clinical significance. Antibiotics given more than 1.5 hours earlier seems to be inconsequential in the overall time from onset of illness to antibiotics.
That was really good, Jen. Oh, you're good at talking nerdy. Okay, let's talk confounders now. In this study, there was concurrent training on sepsis recognition. You can actually see the improvement in time to antibiotics for the usual care group when compared to the baseline statistics they had. It went from 93 minutes in the usual care group down to 70 minutes in the usual care group once they provided training. And this decrease was not statistically significant, but you could see how this decrease would mitigate any potential benefit of giving antibiotics in the pre-hospital setting. In addition, the 20% of patients already on antibiotics before randomization may also have diluted any effect of the intervention.
Sounds good. So short response time and transport times. They have a really good EMS system in the Netherlands, with 93% of cases having a response time of less than 15 minutes and an average of 40 minutes from dispatch to arrival to the emergency department. Wow, Ken, that sounds like London. We have a great EMS system here in London. So would the results differ if it was done in a system that was not as robust or in a rural, remote areas that have longer transport and response times?
Oh, thanks for bringing up the rural and remote, because you know I do provide a lot of community and rural care. And when we look at some of these studies, often they're done in large urban environments with short response times, but it can take an ambulance longer to respond to a call in a rural area. The fifth thing, though, because that's a nice lead-in, actually, Jay, the fifth thing is about the staffing of the EMS. And you brought this up in the beginning. As stated previously, they conducted the study in the Netherlands, and in their EMS system, ambulances are also staffed with nurses. And it's possible that they have more experience or a different skill set in treating septic patients than other EMS services. So we're talking here about external validity. That's it for the nerdy bits, though. Let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
Well, Ken, I have to say that I think we generally agree with the author's conclusions.
Okay, then let's turn back to Jay. You are the superintendent of education. Give us a bottom line.
The bottom line, pre-hospital antibiotics in the ambulance do not appear to have a mortality benefit in patients with varying degrees of sepsis in an optimized, like London, EMS system.
You're really plugging that, aren't you? Okay, and how about a case resolution for that patient that you were called to in the retirement home that was weak and running a fever?
Perfect. So we loaded him up in the stretcher. You make your way to the hospital. He received about 500 mils of normal saline en route. He received some oxygen. The fluid was for his low blood pressure. His oxygen was for his low sats. And they've all come up nicely. So we sign over to the triage nurse and express your concerns about this patient having a real high possibility of sepsis.
And so how are you going to take this new study and apply it clinically?
Well, this reaffirms that we should focus on things that provide benefit in the pre-hospital setting and not on those things that do not. Until there is good evidence demonstrating that a patient-oriented outcome, antibiotics will not be used in part of our EMS protocol. However, as the superintendent of education, I will be using this as an opportunity to remind staff about early recognition of sepsis and the use of personal protective equipment.
And what are you going to tell that patient on the stretcher? How are you going to translate this into English?
Well, sir, you're probably weak because of an infection. Suspect a chest infection because you're coughing and your sats were low. We're going to start an IV and give you some IV fluids on the way to the hospital to help with your blood pressure. And they'll do some tests there to determine your diagnosis and give you the proper treatment.
All right, it's time for the Keener contest. And last week's winner was Matt Corey, a PA from Phoenix. He knew foreign body aspiration should be considered in a preschooler with wheeze, but without signs of an infection. Corey has won before, but guess what? I've got new cool skeptical prizes, which both Jen and Jay will receive today. So if you've not won before, play again. Jen, give us the question for this week.
What was the fantastic acronym they gave to this study, and what did it stand for?
Ooh, that's an easy one, isn't it? All right, well, if you know the answer to this week's Keener question, then send me an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive one of the cool new skeptical prizes. Now, there is some other FOMED resources on this, and I'll list them in the show notes. But I wanted to thank you, Jay, for coming back on the SGEM.
Thank you for having me.
And Jen, thanks for coming on and talking nerdy.
Thanks, it's a pleasure.
Now here's the hard part. Since I have two guest skeptics, you're going to have to give the tagline together. So I'll count you in. Here we go. One, two, three.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Ooh, stereo paramedics. Oh, yeah.